beginning our parsha. And our parsha is Shoftim. As a quick overview, Parshat Shoftim tells us the mitzvah of establishing judges. The parsha tells us don't offer an animal that is blemished. There's this temptation to think I'm going to play a game with God. Right? People finish wearing an item. It's all worn out. Let's give it to the poor. So it's better than throwing it out, but maybe what we give to the poor has to be of better quality. We have in our parsha the responsibility to address public issues. If our neighbor, we know our neighbor is doing something in their house, but it's something that's really wrong, we can't ignore it. We have the mitzvah of going to the high court, which will teach us a lot. We'll go into that. The Torah tells us the mitzvah of the rebellious elder, someone who hears the ruling of the high court and he says, yeah, but I think different. He's entitled to think different. He's not entitled to go back and rule differently. We have the mitzvah of establishing a king and his lamentations, not to have too many wives, too much money, not to be too arrogant, can't do questions yet. And as we move forward, the laws of the Kohanim and the Levim, that they get the Truma and the Meiser. We have the prohibition not to give our sons over to Molech. We'll discuss that at greater length. And the prohibitions of doing different types of paganism and idol worship. The mitzvah, be whole with Hashem. And the idea that we shouldn't turn to all these different charlatans. The idea of a person who says a prophecy in the name of Hashem and he's lying, that he has to get the death penalty. And then we have the mitzvah of three cities of refuge. We're up to Shishi. We have the prohibition of taking away someone else's territory, someone else's land. And the mitzvah of false witnesses, that Kasher Zomam, there can be instances where they get the punishment they intended to inflict on the other party. The Torah warns us at the end of our parsha, don't be scared when you go to war. Hashem is with you. And establishing a kohen and policemen when we go to war. And then we have the laws of how we approach war, where we offer them peace before we go out to war against them. We have the mitzvah of Bal Tashchis. Don't be destructive unnecessarily. And then we end the parsha with the mitzvah of how we shouldn't ignore a person who was murdered. And if we cannot discover what happened, we have this whole process called Egla Arufa to make a big deal. There was a murder in town. And with that, we finish the quick overview. Now let's go through our parsha with more depth. Yes, Mr. Tawir.
But I know that there, in the Gemara, that there was one Tana, I think it was Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Elazar, that even though that in Shemaim it ruled that he was correct, because he said, like, if I'm correct that the wall of the Bet Midrash fall, that like the tree grow differently, like that a heavenly voice, but and it said that like the Chachamim ruled the majority who prevailed, that they were punished because he suffered, like he went into exile. I don't remember it exactly, so I'm sorry.
What's the question?
So, even wouldn't it be that he was Moret, that he was the Zakena Moret, that he was the rebellious elder?
Good question, we'll get there. Okay, let's see. So we begin. And our parasha begins with the concept of leadership. We have to have judges. And when we appoint judges, there's always the danger they're going to be corrupt. Torah tells us the responsibility to appoint just judges. Now, sometimes you have a court case or you have a shaila and it's tempting. Rabbi so-and-so will give me a good answer. You have to look for the person who you believe is honest is going to give you the correct answer. The Torah says you're not allowed to take a bribe, even if you say, I was going to rule that way anyways. No. Bribes blind us. So we have to try and pursue the truth. Torah says you have to be careful. You guys will be Bezrat Hashem in positions of leadership. Everyone that comes to Machon Meir is a leader. Otherwise you wouldn't be here. Every one of you had to prevail against external pressures. Everyone else did not do this and you came here. It's rare that we have two people from the same town. Right? But every person is unique and he says, I'm doing what I believe and I come to Machon Meir. So Machon Meir is an institution for leaders. But that means that in your community you might be in the position of helping decide who should be the rabbi, who should be the president if you're not the president, who should decide things. And the Torah gives us a special mitzvah that the people who are in positions of power to decide who will be the rabbi, etc., have a huge responsibility to get the right person to the job. I can tell you, this past year, I was part of the board that decided who would be the rabbi of our yeshuv. I didn't sleep at night. The amount of effort and prayer and research that we tried to do to get it right. And after all the effort we did, I was praying like crazy. We shouldn't make a mistake. It's a huge responsibility. It affects everyone. So that's, the Torah says, don't plant a tree that will be an idol worshipping tree. That's an Asherah. Our sages say, why is that written here in the middle of Judges? The Torah is telling you the tree is the leader. Obviously, you're also prohibited from planting that tree. But the Torah is telling you, don't plant a leader that's going to end up misleading the people. We're short on time. Let's hold off on questions for a few minutes. This includes a prohibition of planting trees in general on the Temple Mount. Jews are not allowed to plant trees next to a place of worship for Hashem, because the pagans used to do that. It was a way of identifying the place of worship. They'd have these high trees. Everyone knew it was there. We move on. The mitzvah of don't offer an animal that has a blemish. So the Navi describes that people used to take piseach v'iver, the animal that went blind, the animal that was crippled, great, I'll offer it as a sacrifice. Well, we have that temptation. So the Torah gives us a formula, it says in the Navi. Hakriveihu na lefechatecha. Would you offer that animal to your governor? If you wanted a political favor, would you give him that? Hayirtzecha, would he like you better for it? Oh, Hayisafanecha, would he grant you the favors you want? God says that's your approach to heaven. So that's why when it comes Hanukkah, I used to go to high school where we'd have contests. Who could be most original in building a menorah, Chanukiah, that's free? So one guy made it out of bottle caps, right? Put bottle caps, and they figured out a way of attaching it to the Coke bottle, right? And then you can fill that with oil. Kosher menorah. But is it nice? Is that the way you would do it if you were trying to honor someone? We're going to buy an esrog, a lulav. Why do people have gold, silver esrog cases? Because I'm showing that the mitzvah is precious to me. When we take out tefillin, we give them a kiss. There's an attitude we're supposed to show. It's precious. So Hashem says, don't offer me animals that are blemished. This is a big temptation. We all have that temptation. Okay, we move forward. By the way, I recommend you get a nice sidur. A sidur you enjoy reading from. You're coming up to Yom Tovim, get a machzor. One of the things you have to do is build your library. How are you going to know what to pray? Get a Hebrew-English machzor so you know what to say on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Okay. You hear that your neighbor has set up a little Buddha in his basement, and once a week he goes down and prays to the Buddha. So you say, what's in my business? Live and let live, says the Torah. It doesn't work that way. If you know about it, you have to say, this is evil, this is wrong, this does not belong here. This does not belong in our midst. And sometimes it's tempting to turn a blind eye. So people turn a blind eye. And we have to be aware that you're not always allowed to turn a blind eye. So I was once in a community where girls reported that a certain man had tried, had invited them to give them candies, and then he locked the door. And they were able to unlock the door and run away. So when I heard about it, I went over to the mayor of the community, who happened to daven in a shul not far from where I was davening, and I said, you heard about the story? He said, sure. I said, what are you doing about it? He said, the police are dealing. I said, that's very nice, the police are dealing, but I want to understand, is there anyone ensuring that other kids don't go into his house? So he said, I can't do anything, the police have to do. I said, what does that mean? You're going to let this person continue giving out candy to kids when you have no idea what's happening? He says to me, what do you want me to do? I said to him, if I told you there was a hole that little children are sticking their hands in, and there's a cobra in that hole, every so often he bites, and sometimes he doesn't, would you say it's not my problem till I get the police down here to deal with the cobra? Or would you say I have to appoint someone to stand next to that hole to make sure little children don't stick their hand in the hole? He says to me, what do you want me to do? I said, I want you to appoint two people to stand at his house and make sure that kids don't go knocking and don't enter that house. He said, if you think it should be done, you could do it. I'm a political figure. If I do it, the police can come. come after me. I can't do it. I said, fine. I didn't walk back into shul. That Shabbos, I didn't finish davening in shul. I sent for friends of mine. I said, we're going to do a rotation between us. We spent the rest of Shabbos in front of this guy's house, making sure that kids didn't go. Kids would come and knock on his door and ask for candy. And sometimes, based on what we heard, inappropriate things were happening. So I stood there in the heat. Now, the story makes a lot of sense to us, right? Now let's flip the story for a minute. He's not giving out candy and molesting children. He's inviting children in and saying, come down to my basement. Look at my Buddha. All you have to do is pray to him a little bit and you'll have a good week. Would it be legitimate to stand out his door and say, kids, you don't go into that house? We're very quick to react on things that we understand, like the story of the concubine on the hilltop. All of Israel mobilized. They all said, we're not letting it happen. There was a rape. There was a vicious rape. They raped the woman to death. And so, literally, she died at the end of the night. And so all of Israel mobilized. Civil war. We can't let this happen. But all of Israel knew at the very same time, there was a man named Micha. He had set up a house of pagan idol worship. Jews were coming to his house. They were praying there. A whole tribe had taken him and said, we want you to lead our tribe. And everyone turned a blind eye. And these were pious Jews. That means it's very easy for us, when it comes to God's honor, so to speak, to say, leave me alone. Comes the Torah and says, you're responsible. You can't turn a blind eye to this. You cannot say, he's doing it. What does it have to do with me? No. That's why the Jewish people lost the first two battles. When they were fighting on the concubine of the hilltop, they waged civil war because the tribe of Benjamin gave refuge. They allowed the perpetrators of the crime to stay alive, so the whole country waged civil war against them and they lost. God did not let them win the first two battles for this reason, because God said, how come when you all know right now that there's an idol, a public idol in the tribe of Dan, in the house of Micha, you're all turning a blind eye, because it's not nice for your honor if man's honor is savaged. But if it's my honor, you're willing to turn a blind eye. That's the mitzvah in this week's parsha. Torah says you're not allowed to turn a blind eye. You know your neighbor's established a Buddha in his basement. You have a responsibility. We move on. Torah says, obviously you have to make sure you know the facts, right? You don't go destroying the guy when you don't know what's going on.
I have a question.
I have many. Yes.
I have many.
What?
So, does that apply if the neighbor's not Jewish?
No.
It's only if the neighbor's Jewish?
Yes. Okay. It's only in Israel if the neighbor's Jewish. In Israel, we have a greater responsibility for one another. In Chutzarts, I'm responsible, but it's a different type of responsibility. In Israel, we're one people here. We have to deal. If he's not Jewish, it's not my responsibility. No. What happens when we're not sure what the law is? So Torah says there's a high court. Now this mitzvah is very important, because what this mitzvah tells us is that the rabbis were given the responsibility with their tradition to interpret the Torah. Torah says you're not sure how to rule. How come I'm not sure? Because there are going to come up questions where you're not sure. So I got a question. There's this new thing going on now. Vegetarians don't want to eat animals. So they're developing plants that can have the flavor of pork. They're developing now plants which will have all the flavors of meat, but they don't come from an animal. Right? This is in the process of happening now as we speak. This is the in thing.
Artificial flavoring's been around for quite a while.
It's not only they're trying to develop a tomato that when you eat the tomato, you taste pork.
They're also making like food which grows spontaneously that tastes like meat.
Right. So coming back to, so you have a question, where does it say it in Torah? It happens to say it. The Mishnayos discuss this type of deal. That's another question, but I'm just saying there can come up new questions which you're not sure what the halacha is. Says the Torah, go up to the high court. From here we learn that the high court has the responsibility and the tradition to interpret Torah. One of the questions people very often ask is, why should I listen to the rabbinic rulings? I think differently. Right, but that's what the Torah says in our parsha. You want to learn, be a rabbi. Every Jew can be a rabbi. It's one of the beautiful things in Judaism. You want to be a rabbi, be a rabbi. doesn't matter if a person's a bastard. Could be his father and his mother are brother and sister. So he's a mamzer, poor kid. Look at what his parents did to him. But he can still become the huge Talmud Chacham. He wants to learn Torah. We don't close the doors. Come learn Torah. That's the concept of mamzer Talmud Chacham. It says he gets more honor than the Kohen Gadol. If he became a big Talmid Chacham, good for him. The doors are open. Everyone's invited. We say the crown of royalty, that's a Davidic dynasty. The crown of priesthood, Kohuna, that's Aaron's family. Crown of Torah, it's sitting right there. Whoever wants can go up and learn it. Torah's available. It's here for free. Go online today, right? Millions of shiurim for free. Back to our parsha. So the Torah here gives us the mitzvah that we have to listen to the high court. Now this mitzvah is sometimes misinterpreted. People say, the rabbi told you you should invest in this stock. Why didn't you invest in that stock? Because it doesn't work that way. Where are we told we're supposed to listen to the high court? In interpreting the Torah. You want to go to a rabbi for practical advice, you can do it. I might pay to listen to him. But there's no mitzvah to listen to him. The mitzvah to listen is to the high court in interpreting the Torah. Now, there's another concept. You ask the rabbi a shaila in halacha. So then there are many instances where you're not supposed to do different because you asked him the halacha. But that's a totally different concept, not to be confused. Torah says sometimes you'll have an older, someone who's learned Torah, and he says, I don't think like them. That's fine, you're entitled not to think like them. But then he goes with his community, with his rabbis, they go up to the high court, and the high court tells him the halacha. And then he comes back home, and someone comes to him and asks him, is this shaver kosher or not, Rabbi, tell me. And he says, tell you what, the high court said it's not kosher, but I'm telling you it's kosher, you could use the shaver. So what happens? He comes back home and he gives a ruling against the high court. Technically, could it be he's right? Could be. Is he right? No, he's wrong. Torah says, God says, I am telling you, the way to interpret Torah is with the use of the high court. And what the way they interpret it is how I want you to observe the Torah. And if you're not going to listen to them, then that's a biblical prohibition punishable by the death penalty. Yes, sir?
That was my question.
What?
But the punishment was.
Yes, death penalty. To the one who gives that ruling. I can't right now, Thursday night. Bezrat Hashem. We move forward. People want a king. It's good to have a king, provided that they have good reason. Now here we have an interesting concept. You're not allowed to appoint a non-Jew. This is relevant to us sometimes in the election process. If you're a member of the Likud, you have to decide who should be the number one people, right? Depending on how many seats the Likud gets in parliament, will define how many people get up there. You could give like 100 shekel a year and you're a member of the Likud. Now, if you're a member, you show up before elections and you vote who should get which number. So there's a man named Kara, which is a Druze Arab, and he happens to be a wonderful Knesset member. Are you allowed to put him as number one? Because it's in our interest. He always speaks up in our benefit. So this halacha is relevant. Can you appoint a non-Jew? That's question number one. You're not supposed to appoint a non-Jew in positions of leadership in Israel. And when it comes to voting into office, so each person, when it'll be relevant to them, they'll ask their shaila. But you should realize it's relevant.
Is
yes.
That law reinforced by the Israeli state?
Not at all, no. We have enemies in the parliament. Ahmed Tibi is helping the Hamas. I'm saying, no.
You said the highest, as just the highest position has to be.
No, so we apply it to all positions of leadership. Okay. Should not be given to a non-Jew. Which is interesting because King David had non-Jews who were generals in his army.
Who?
David HaMelech. He had generals. He had Itai Akiti. Itai from the city of Gat, a Philistine. He had generals who were not Jewish. Back to our parsha. I said when it comes to the halacha, the concept we have to know. So we'll know to ask a question when the question will come up. The king is prohibited from having too many horses. He might come to lead the nation back to Egypt. So our sages tell us here we have three mitzvot that are different than the rest of the mitzvot of the Torah. Ordinarily, Torah gives a mitzvah, doesn't tell you why. Eat kosher. Why? Is it healthy for me? Maybe. Circumcise yourself. Why? Is it healthy for me? Yeah. Is that why God gave us the mitzvah? He doesn't tell us. He says, I told you what to do. This is what you got to do. But why? I don't know. There's a reason in heaven, but he doesn't tell us. Here you have three mitzvot where God tells you why. He says, I don't want the king to have too many horses because he might bring the nation back to Egypt. I don't want him to have too many wives because they're going to confuse his thought. I don't want him to have too much money. He shouldn't become too arrogant, etc. So our sages say that the Torah did this as a way of teaching us why the Torah does not give reasons for mitzvos. Because what happens? The smartest man on earth, King Solomon, becomes king. And he learns these mitzvot and he says, I'm going to be okay. I can have horses. I will not end up sending Jews back to Egypt. I could have wives. They won't confuse me. And Chazal say, exactly this is what happened. He had too many wives. They confused him, says in the Navi. He had too many horses. He ended up sending experts back to Egypt to buy the right horses. So that was to show us how even the smartest man will end up falling if he tries to outsmart the Torah. That's why the Torah doesn't give us the reasoning. Because if we would know the reason, we'd always think, I could accomplish it without the mitzvah. We'd always think we could do better. We move forward. The king has a mitzvah. He would write himself a small Sefer Torah together with the tefillin that he would always wear. He'd have a small Sefer Torah he'd carry with him, and he has a mitzvah to read in it often. He wrapped it on his arm right. On one side was the tefillin, on the other side he had a small Sefer Torah. We're up to Shlishi. We have a mitzvah to give appointment to a person's children if they are worthy of it like him. So when the king dies, his children are the natural continuation, provided they're worthy. Now this applies to other areas of leadership as well. It's not only kingship. It could be the rabbinate or other things. Kohen. We're charging forward. We're supposed to give our first crops to the Kohen, our first shearing of the sheep. We will, Be'ezrat Hashem, have a special class on how we give Trumos and Maestros. Down the year, we'll have a field trip and we'll learn how we do that. We move forward. Torah says, don't allow your children to be given over to Molech. How were things given over to Molech? So they had this figure. They had this castle, and the castle had rooms, seven rooms. And depending on how much of a gift you brought the idol would define which room you'd be allowed to enter, how close you could enter the idol. The idol was called Molech. It had a face that looked like a calf, a galim yishakun. And when a person would come, and a young cow, and when a person would come to donate his son, so then they'd say, you deserve all the honor, we're going to take you in. They take him in all seven rooms until the innermost room where he'd see this idol, the shape of a calf, and the idol would have its hands out, metal hands. The idol was hollow, and he'd place the child on the metal hands, and they'd say, now you're entitled to kiss the idol. And he'd be allowed to lean forward and kiss the lips of the calf. And then they'd take him out the seven rooms, they'd start beating the drums, and they'd light a fire inside the hollow idol. The idol would heat up, and its hands, which were made of solid metal, would heat up, and the baby would be burnt to death. So this was the worship of Molech, and it was prevalent in Israel. It was prevalent among the Amori in Israel, and the Torah warns, don't do it. And you know what? The Jews did do it. In the period of the first temple, Jews were doing this, and the Torah warns not to do it. It's mind-boggling where people's desires and where people's superstitions can lead them. To a point where a person says, if I do this, everything will be okay. It's good for the baby. It's good for me. They'd be playing the drums outside so you wouldn't hear the baby crying inside, right? But people killed their own children, and that's why the Torah warns us the prohibition of giving one's children to fire, to Molech. The Torah says, don't do Ov and Yidoni, or ask the dead. So we once had a student here who... he had psychological issues. So he comes to me one day and he says, I'm doing much better. I said, what happened? He says, well, there's an alumni of the Machon who's an alternative medicine doctor. I went to him and he cured me. I said, really? What did he do? He said, he did a seance. He shut the lights. He lit candles. He called on the dead. And then we asked him all these questions and different signs. He showed me with all the answers. I said, really? Well, you can go back to that alumni of ours and tell him he deserves to be killed. Tell him Frankenthal said he deserves the death penalty. So he goes, I get a phone call a few days later, this alumni calls and he's all shaken up and he says, the guy told me you said to tell me, I he said, I know not to trust him. I know he's not 100% balanced. I said, no, you can trust him. I said it. He says, why'd you say such a thing? I said, why'd you do such a thing? He says to me, you and I both know it's a lie. But the guy has psychological problems. If I tell him, you know, you have to start getting out of bed on time, you have to eat a normal diet, he's not going to listen to me. So I lit the candles and I told him the dead have come, and I sold him the load of goods so that he would do it. He said, you see, it worked. The guy is now behaving normally and he's back on a normal schedule and his life is in order. I said, that's very nice. So you and I both know it's a lie, but he thinks the dead were talking to him. What do you think they did in the days of the Tanakh? What do all these charlatans do? The guy thinks the dead are talking to him. Who told you that's not the biblical prohibition of asking the dead? Rambam says that's what they all did. They'd lie to the guy, but they do it in a way that was convincing. There are ways to make a person convinced that the dead have come and spoken to him. So the Torah prohibits that. The Torah says, I hate that, God says.
Quite a lot of movies that they did about exorcism,
So the Torah goes on and says, Tamim tiyeh im Hashem Elokecha. I want you to be whole with me, Hashem says, because the nations, they go to sorcerers, and you have prophets. So there's a big machloket how to understand that pasuk. Rambam says the pasuk's telling you the nations go to sorcerers, which are a bunch of lies, and you have the real thing, you have prophets. Ramban says there are forces out there. The Torah tells you it's paganism and don't use the forces. But when the Torah says they have sorcerers, you have prophets, the Torah is saying I've given strengths in the world that they can access and you are prohibited from it. You go to your prophet, you'll get the truth. Now, I just want to illustrate for a minute what Rambam is talking about. When I was a kid, so I didn't know you're not supposed to do sleight of hand, so I studied magic and I was very into magic. I put on shows and I was a member of organizations, and one day we were traveling and we saw an advertisement in that city that the old magician had died and his wife, the widow, was selling all his goods. So I said to my family, I said, my siblings and my parents, I said, I want to go buy. It's an opportunity. So they agreed. They didn't know what they were getting themselves into. We went in. I bought up most of his stuff, and then he had a library. He had a library, and the library was amazing. And part of the library was a library on how to be a sorcerer, how to use crystal balls. And I stood in his house and I started reading the books, and they were mind-boggling, and I will show you right now some of the skills I learned from those books. So one of the things, now if
yes,
you guys...
Professor Dumbledore
did this year. So if you guys wish, I want to show you, because it's an amazing tool. How do you read minds? So what I would like to do now is for a minute, look at each of you, and I will tell you... Can I just look in your eyes for 1 second? Thank you. That's enough. I am going to share with you now points which you shouldn't hold against me, but they are from the deep, deep personality of who you are. And I won't say more details than necessary, just so you understand that I understand, okay? So there is one shared element in this group specifically. There is something that really haunts you. There's something deep down inside. There's a sad part of who you are. There is a part of your personality where you sense there's something from your childhood, something which you prefer people wouldn't know, something which you don't like to think about, something which you put away. And there's a part of you which you don't want to look at. And there's a sad part of you. And there's a part which you wonder if you will ever come to terms with. Now, I just wanted to do this unique for this group. I apologize if I opened sore wounds. I did not go into the details. Now, what's the chachma in all this? That this is true for everyone. But if you're sitting here and I'm charging you $550 for the 20 minutes you're going to talk to me, and I have a crystal ball and I look you in the eye and I say, you know, there is something in your past. I don't want to bring it up right now. We will deal with it at a later date after you pay me a few more $1,000 for our sessions. We will bring it to resolution. You could bring a person to tears. We can discuss that lonely part of you. We can discuss that part of you that's very scared if people knew who I really was. Yes, but it's universal. What these people are doing is they're playing on universal weaknesses. We share these weaknesses. But if you didn't know that, I could bring you to a point where you were convinced I know what's going on in your life. There is something very recent that happened that you're not sure how to interpret in your life. And there are things that you hope will happen in the not-so-distant future, and you wonder if they will really happen. Wow, how did he know? But there are universal weaknesses and hopes. And there are things that we can say that if we leave them general enough, then we can touch everyone. So that was what was ingenious in the books I saw in his house. Now, I don't use this. I didn't say it's forbidden. I don't use this, but it's important to know that Rambam's opinion is that when we speak about these sorcerers, they're not using powers. In general, what they're doing is they're tricking people. And there's a way to trick people. I can make you guys believe a lot of things if I wanted to. About my knowledge of you. So that's Rambam versus Ramban, which is really a more ancient machlokas, how to understand these mitzvot. Moshe says, Hashem will send us a prophet like him, like Moshe. What does that mean, like Moshe? So we're supposed to test him. Is he worthy? Many people have said they're prophets. And our first question is, how much Torah do you know? Are you worthy of prophecy? How beautiful are your traits? You want to walk in and say you're a prophet? Let's see. Show me that you know Torah, that you're a master of Torah. Show me that you have the most perfect traits. And I'll end with a story. About 15 years ago, the media was called in. There was a woman who had gone mad. And
here in Israel.
And this man with a long white coat and a very long white beard, who was called the Kabbalist, was called in, as was the media. And he immediately declared that a demon had entered this woman, what's called the D-book. Now this concept exists in Talmud. Shows up once, that it happened in the days of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Not like it's a common thing, it appears that it happened once. So, and even there, it doesn't say it's something that happened throughout the world ever before or ever again. It says it happened once in the days of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in a specific circumstance. But at any rate, this man comes in and the media comes in. And he starts interviewing the spirit. And the woman has a very weird voice. It's not her voice, anyone that knows her. And they videotape her lying down. And this man speaks to her. And he says, demon, demon, tell me your name. And he gives him some kind of name. And he says, he starts asking about the elections. And then the demon says, and I can't stand it. Her son has drugs in the house. If you go to his room, under the carpet, in this door, you'll find the drugs. And they send people there and they find drugs. And everyone's convinced it's a demon. And then he tells the demon, by the holiness of the Torah, I'm going to command you to come out of the lady's pinky. And he cures her, and then she gets up, and everyone's like, wow, okay, great. This story happened no more than 15 years ago, closer to 20 years ago. 20 years ago, the story happened.
96?
It was 97. 96 or 97, one or the other. So, I was in yeshiva at the time. I heard of the story. I said, it's all a lie. And I had good friends in yeshiva who said to me they would not talk to me again. I said, why not? They said, he's a great rabbi and you're saying he's a liar. I said, yes, he's a liar. They said, he's a great rabbi. I said, no, he isn't. They said, how do you know? I said, I don't know. I never met the man, but he's a liar. They said, how do you know? Now, I was all of 18 then. I said, because the Talmud says you're not supposed to look at a woman. So if he's such a holy rabbi, how does he bring in videotapes to videotape a lady lying down? That's against halacha. And if he went against halacha in that, I don't believe anything he did. It's all a lie. He's not a rabbi. He's a man with a long white beard. It's all a lie. If he's so holy, then he should have been so holy that he wouldn't stand in the room with the media. He wouldn't let the media come and videotape a woman lying on her bed. That's immodest. You're showing the whole world a woman lying on her bed? No. If he's not perfect in his modesty, then he's a liar. Don't tell me he's so holy. So friends of mine ostracized me in yeshiva. They wouldn't talk to me. I said, you have no right to talk that way. I said, fine. If you want to talk to me, don't talk to me. And life went on. 6 months later, the lady came to the media. And she said to the media, it was all a hoax. These people got tons of money because a lot of people believe that they're so holy. They wanted to support their institutions. So they got millions of dollars. And we agreed they would give me part of it. And they didn't. So now I'm going to tell you it was all a lie. They said, but you had a funny voice. She said, I'll make the funny voice right now. And she redid the whole voice. They said, but he said about the drugs. She said, I knew about the drugs all along. What parent doesn't know where his kid is hiding drugs? You think I didn't know about it? It was all a game. So then suddenly I became a kosher Jew again. The Torah says, if a person's going to walk in and tell you he's a prophet, then show me your credentials, show me how much Torah you know, show me your midot, show me you're worthy of being called a prophet. And after that, the high court has to interview, and the high court has to check, can you give us miracles? Do your miracles stand up? Are they perfectly right? If he says tomorrow at 12 noon, the sun will set, and the sun sets at 12:05, so then he gets a death penalty because he's a liar. But he said a miracle. But God isn't off by 5 minutes. That you want to test the prophet, he has to be 100% right. So the Torah says, you will have real prophets, but you have to check them that they're real. We will continue the parasha Be'ezat Hashem tomorrow night. We're out of time. We'll